You're listening to Living Lab Radio. I'm Heather Goldstone. It's that time of year when great white sharks start filtering back into Massachusetts waters. They don't get a lot of credit for their intelligence, but sharks are highly adapted to their environments and their lifestyles, and it turns out their brains reflect that. My next guest spends her days trying to get inside the heads of sharks, literally. Carrie Yopak is a shark researcher and assistant professor at University of North Carolina, Wilmington. We spoke to her during a recent visit to the New England Aquarium. Kara, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. I'm really excited to be here.
You have apparently wanted to study sharks since you were 5 years old. What was it about these animals that drew your attention?
Oh, gosh. It's really funny. I really was that kid who was just completely fascinated with sharks. I can't draw it back to any one particular thing, but interestingly enough, it actually started here in Boston. And I remember coming to the New England Aquarium as a kid and just being completely fascinated with the large circular tank and specifically sharks. My friends were all reading, you know, Nancy Drew and the Babysitter's Club, and I was reading the Shark Attack Files. I couldn't get enough. And I think every kid wants to be a marine biologist at some stage in their life, but I had a singular focus, and that focus just never waned for me.
Did you always want to study shark brains specifically?
No. So I didn't really get into the neuro side until my PhD. So I was just fascinated with sharks. I was really focused on understanding their behavior. And as I was going through my undergraduate, I did some undergraduate research in Woods Hole. And I was really interested in behavior and sensory biology. I just kept reading. And the more I read, the more questions kept coming back to the brain, because you can't understand sensory biology or behavior till you understand the brain. And there wasn't a lot done on it. I read a paper that was published in the 1970s that looked at brain weight to body weight ratios across 12 shark species. And very little had been done since then. And so that was kind of the paper that sparked it. But my advisor, I took that paper to him, which basically showed across 12 species that sharks have brain weight to body weight ratios that are comparable to birds and mammals, which was shocking because sharks are, you know, have a reputation for just being these pre-programmed eating machines.
So that means the brains are larger than you would have thought.
Yes, exactly. So which was really surprising. And so I brought that paper to my advisor and said I've been looking and nothing's really been done since the 70s on this. It gave me the biggest piece of advice of my career, which he said, you should go and collect some brains.
And so you did. How many have you collected at this point?
So we've looked at the brains of over 180 species. I think for my PhD, I looked at 40 species. And every time, it sounds a bit like gruesome, but every time I collect a new brain, like a true zombie, it challenges me and it changes some preconceived notion that I had. And it kind of broadens my perspective about what the brain can tell us about behavior and sensory specialization.
I found a photo on one of your websites of about a half a dozen different brains, presumably all shark brains, and no two look even vaguely similar. So let's start with the great white, which is always on the mind of Massachusetts residents this time of year. What does a great white shark's brain kind of look like? Can you describe it a little bit?
I can. So a misconception. So everybody sort of imagines when they look at brains of other animals that they're going to look like miniature human brains. So we need to dispel that myth because shark brains don't look like little human brains. They're kind of elongated. So sort of like a spark plug. And what's interesting is that they're made up of all of the kind of major brain components that are shared across vertebrates. So if you didn't know your brain was like a shark brain, it kind of is. So if I were to give you a quick neuroanatomy lesson and you were to look at it, what you'd notice with a white shark brain is that the parts of the brain that are enlarged are regions that are associated with motor control, vision, and smell. So what we can say by looking at that brain is that chances are this is a highly visual animal, it's highly active or agile, and it likely relies on olfaction or smell in order to find prey. And what's interesting is if I lined up all 180 brains right on a table. Even if you are not a neuroanatomist, you could start to group them together just based on how they look. And at the end of the day, what you'd find is you've grouped together species who live in similar environments, are hunting similar prey, and doing similar things.
Hmm. So then what does the brain of something like a whale shark that it, you know, doesn't even go after, isn't even a predator in the same sense, it's a filter feeder, how different does its brain look from a great white?
It looks quite different. And what's interesting is, so we don't want to give away the whale shark, but we'll pick a different one. Let's imagine I put a deep sea shark brain next to that great white shark brain. What you'd notice if you looked at the deep sea shark is that those visual brain regions that are so big in a white shark are actually really small. So a deep sea shark is living in these deep, dark environments. So instead of the visual brain being large, we see large regions for olfaction and exceptionally large regions for electroreception. So what we've suggested is that this reflects specialization of non-visual senses in those deep, dark environments. And you know, as you move to higher light level environments, you again see enlargement of the visual brain, kind of literally almost as you move up. So what is really great about having this broad data set is that now we can start to be predictive about behavior in species we maybe don't know a lot about or can't study behaviorally in the wild very easily.
I'm talking with shark brain researcher Kara Yopak of UNC Wilmington. One thing you've been doing recently is 3D printing replicas of all of those hundreds of brains that you have in your collection. What's the benefit of that?
So we do a lot of 3D printing. Actually, it's been amazing for education. So a lot of the specimens in my collection are quite rare. As you can probably imagine, brain tissue is very delicate. It can get damaged very easily. And there is something very powerful about being able to hold something in your hand. So I teach neuroscience, and we have a large component of that that's comparative neuroanatomy. And I'm sure you noticed when you looked at the photos of those 12 species and saw how different they were. When I tell my students brains between sharks are quite different, they go, oh, yeah, okay. And then I show them a picture and they go, oh, they are different. And then I hand them to them. Hmm. And there is something about holding those three or four different species brains and picking it up. It's called kinesthetic learning. You can actually gain a much better sense of what I mean by saying they're different when you actually have them.
You already said that when you started this work, very little had been done in terms of research on shark brains. And it seems that what you're doing is very much like kind of the very early human brain research, where researchers were just trying to map, you know, what are the regions and the different lobes of the brain. And over time, that's turned into looking at, the actual electrical connections between neurons, and then diving down into the individual cells and looking at the different molecules that are involved in how the brain functions. Do you imagine shark brain research going that same way? And what do you think we could learn by getting into these finer scales of the shark brain?
Absolutely. So luckily, since then, there have been a few groups who have been pushing this field forward. My group is definitely one of them in terms of comparative anatomy. There are some groups that are looking at development of the brain, some who are doing more of the behavioral cognition. I think we are definitely moving in that direction. One of the really critical things to know about a shark brain is that they are one of the earliest vertebrates. And they are actually the earliest vertebrates to have what we call the basic brain blueprint. So they are the first to have a brain that's made up of all the major structures shared across all other jawed vertebrates. So it's so critical to push the field forward, because we can actually learn so much about our own brains by kind of looking at where it all began. So we are starting to delve into some of the cellular work, looking at neurons and glial cells with some of our collaborators back at the University of Western Australia, looking at some of those connections. There was some very, very early research that did some of that mapping and looking at connectivity between structures in a few key model species. And we would love to push that to kind of broaden the scope across a wide range of species. Because as you see, there's so much diversity in the brain, it would not be surprising if there's huge diversity in neuron number, synaptic connections, things like that. So there's so much work to be done, and I would love to see the field advance in that direction.
One thing that's really different about shark brains compared to human brains, we hear a lot, you know, with our own learning about the fact that our brain becomes less plastic and we don't regenerate nerve cells as adults. But for sharks, their central nervous system keeps growing throughout their life, right?
Exactly. And it's probably one of the other reasons why I think they're such intriguing species to look at. So sharks, and actually fish and many reptiles and amphibians, experience what we call indeterminate growth, which means they grow throughout their life. And as you just said, their central nervous system does as well. So sharks have a brain that basically grows forever. So unlike us, where we have only a few regions of our brain that has adult neurogenesis or regions that grow new neurons, sharks are actually able to do it throughout their life. So what a number of my students are looking at is, what are some of those natural changes? So how does the brain grow in total size throughout an animal's life? And then how do those major structures grow throughout an animal's life? And are those changes associated with changes in habitat or diet? And then we're also, because brains of sharks are essentially plastic, we've got a number of projects looking at how environmental conditions might affect brain development. So how do anthropogenic disturbances affect the brains of these animals? Things like global warming or habitat degradation. If you've got a brain that is plastic and essentially is growing forever, how might its environment literally be shaping the animal's brain?
Are there ways that this research could then be used to actually try to help conserve shark populations?
Absolutely. I mean, that's ultimately the future goal. If we can assess how environmental changes might be leading to essentially neural degeneration, the goal in my group is definitely to start looking at ways we might be able to mitigate these changes. Because ultimately, if we are dealing with, you know, captive rearing programs, for example, and there are ways that we might be able to mitigate neural degeneration simply through forms of habitat enrichment, then you're far more likely to increase the expectation of survivorship for those animals.
Essentially sending captive sharks to school to learn how to live in the wild.
Exactly. It's kind of a crazy idea. But, you know, again, as sort of I learned very early in my PhD, all roads come back to the brain, right? We associate the brain with everything an animal does. So ultimately, a healthy brain effectively means longevity. And if you can kind of unlock some of the mysteries about what makes a healthy brain, then you can probably work towards unlocking what makes an animal healthy.
Kara Yopak is a shark researcher at the University of North Carolina, Wilmington. Kara, thank you so much for talking with us.
No problem. This was fantastic. Thank you so much for having me.